Okay, so I chose to title this talk something that's kind of related to what John Evans started talking about. And I'm going to turn this toward one trait and one particular EPD in the process, but really with the idea that it's one of a suite of potential new traits. So as John told you, feed accounts for something 70% of the total cost side of production. And therefore, it is an economically relevant trait. That feed gets divided up, obviously, amongst parts of the production system, whether it's the cow nursing a calf, so this cow's got feed intake for maintenance and feed intake for lactation and reproduction and probably some growth. We've got some feedlot cattle that require feed for growth and tissue deposition of one form or another. Unfortunately, as I think we all know, on many bases, beef cattle are not the most efficient producer of protein that we could find. Several species do better. There again is a compelling reason why we might want to focus some effort on genetic improvement of efficiency relative to our competing species. The goal of this really was to develop an EPD to reduce feed use in the production of beef. And this picture that I've borrowed from a paper of Bob Short's, I think, really describes the cow side of that pretty well. I'm not going to talk very much about the cow side, but I do want to keep in mind the cow side as we go forward, because I don't think we can talk about feed intake in separate segments of an integrated production process and really do it complete justice in the same time. I'm going to start with a literature review, and this is sort of, where did I get it wrong, guys? Oops. So back a while ago, we established, or I thought we established, that ratios weren't very good measures of efficiency. Those papers would go back at least as far as the 1940s. Somehow I missed out on the feed-to-gain ratios in this process. And there's a fair amount of evidence by people in a variety of disciplines working more or less independently of each other that all reach that same conclusion. Bob Cook gets blamed for residual feed intake, but the quote from the paper says, gain adjusted for feed is the preferred measure of biological efficiency because it more accurately reflects the mathematical description of cause and effect. I'm not sure how we got the feed adjusted for gain out of that. Yes, Bob Cook presented the concept of residual feed intake at the same time he presented the concept of residual gain, so on. But his recommendation wasn't residual feed intake. It was residual gain. Brian Kennedy pointed out to us that combining feed intake and growth to calculate a single measure of feed efficiency doesn't give us any new information relative to the component traits. And I think those of us who've been in the business of developing many of those selection indexes have recognized that all the feed had a cost, not just part of it. And so the last two pieces of information there really lead me to the concept that feed intake is the trait. It's not some value with prior calculations applied to it to make it some other thing. I think feed intake being the trait also has value in that it allows us to use indicator traits in the analysis. Those indicator traits can do a couple of things for us that are very beneficial. As John Evans pointed out a minute ago, you can add accuracy through the use of indicator traits, and you can also overcome selection bias through the use of indicator traits. If you were to do a national cattle evaluation based on residual feed intake or residual gain or anything else like that, one of the intents in calculating that residual value is to reduce the value of the indicator traits. I don't think that's a good idea, because that allows for selection bias and less accuracy in the genetic evaluation than you would have with feed intake. Feed intake is, as I said a minute ago, also a component of an index. And I don't know how to partition components of efficiency in an index. I know how to cost feed. Donald can tell me how much feed costs on his place. I don't know if he can tell me what the part the cow was supposed to eat cost versus the part that she wasted cost. I think it all costs the same. Feed intake's a bit messy, at least in the feedlot concept. As an experimentalist, a lot of that mess I control, because it's my place, I feed the ration I want, I can do the laboratory analyses I want, so on and so forth. But in the context of national cattle evaluation, feed intake presents a greater challenge. Can I reasonably expect Leo McDonald, Midland Test, Billings, to do the same laboratory analysis of the feedstuffs that the Agricultural Research Service can do laboratory analysis of the feedstuffs in Miles City? Can I reasonably expect Seven Shingles Angus, made that one up, Bill. Can I reasonably expect Seven Shingles Angus with two GrowSafe nodes to give me the same information about the ration? I don't think so. So we've got different rations and different amounts of information. There are some helpful circumstances, however. Almost all of the feed intake data is collected in reasonably large contemporary groups. Now there's a caveat for that, that I have to say those contemporary groups are large in a central test station sort of circumstance. I have to assume that the adjustment period is sufficiently long and able to wash out ranch of origin effects. Otherwise, my statement about contemporary groups doesn't hold true. But that's a challenge. The other thing is that's helpful in the feed intake is a lot of that data collection now is automated, and a lot of it's got pretty nice filters built into it to do some quality control on the data up front. So I think we can get some pretty good quality data, possibly from fairly large contemporary groups. I think we've got a couple of things to do to deal with the mess. The analysis of feed intake, I'm just going to say it's the BIF approach for normally distributed traits. I don't think there's anything particularly nuanced there. I think we talk about multiple traits, models, we use indicator traits to increase the accuracy. Indicator traits also do another thing for us that I think is really beneficial. If we have reasonable correlations with feed intake and those indicator traits, then we extend our national cattle evaluation well beyond those animals that have just got feed intake measured for themselves. If, for instance, I were to include, and I'll show you the data in a minute, if I were to include weaning weight in the analysis, I could potentially at least get a feed intake EPD for every animal with a weaning weight. based on the indicator trait. Granted, there'd be some accuracy issue, but I could potentially get that. So how do I, the next point here is the beginnings of how I deal with the mess. And what I have attempted to do is I've attempted to apply a statistical technique, standardization. So the contemporary groups are fairly large, for the most part 12, 15 or greater. So I calculate the mean of every contemporary group, and I calculate the standard deviation for every contemporary group, and I express all of the data on a within contemporary group to have a mean of 0 and a standard deviation of 1, using the within group information to do that. And then I submit to you that any efficiency value, any index value, is an after the analysis of the primary trait derivation. It's not done until you after you've done the NCE for feed intake. So I'm going to talk, I'm going to flip back and forth between two data sets for the rest of this talk, or for most of the rest of this talk. One data set is the Simmental data set that Wade Schaefer and Jerry Lipsy and Marty Ropp and others have been putting together as a progeny test data set, with the University of Illinois involved in the process. And a couple of years ago now, I got involved in the analysis of some of that data in a very preliminary analysis for the American Simmental's 40th anniversary celebration. And this is just a general description of the data. These steers are all individually fed at the University of Illinois in grow-safe systems, produced on relatively few ranches in a designed sire evaluation. The Angus data is more closely akin to what we would ordinarily call field data. It comes from a variety of sources, and Bill Bowman has assembled that data from those sources. This is a general description of the data, the field data as it comes out of their data set. Feed intake at the time I did the analysis were a little over 4,000 records from 51 contemporary groups, defined as animals tested at the same time in the same place. From those 4,000 animals, we had all of their weaning contemporaries. So we went back to their weaning contemporary groups, took all of the cohorts at that time, and added them to the analysis. Post-weaning gain is all of the contemporaries in that setting, in the feed evaluation setting, including some animals that didn't run through the grow-safe system. And likewise, many of those animals were scanned and had contemporaries that were scanned as well. At the end of the day, there's a couple thousand animals with complete records. So we were going to put this together in one multiple trait prototype, if you will, NCE. Pedigree, there's 45,000 animals, four trait model. Contemporary groups for all traits, direct effects for all traits. I know I've got a better analysis to do of weaning weight. I haven't got it entirely in hand yet, and I used the tool ASREML to do much of this analysis. So this is the Simmental result. First, the standard caveat: I need more data, and Simmental has collected more data in the process. So this the heritabilities are on the diagonal for average daily gain, midweight, feed intake, and RFI, calculated before the fact, if you will. So I did a separate analysis of RFI calculated in the usual sort of way in this data as well. Things to note. RFI does not appear to be genetically independent of either average daily gain or midweight, as is often touted as an attribute of RFI. In this data, that doesn't seem to hold true. The genetic antagonism between growth and intake in this data was smaller than I had kind of expected it to be beforehand. But selection for feed intake was 3 times more effective in reducing feed intake than selection for RFI would be. So there's more potential, if you will, to change feed intake, which I think is the goal if you're trying to reduce cost. There's more potential by changing feed intake or by selection on feed intake than by a RFI. And finally, selection for increased growth reduces RFI. I don't think that's actually surprising. Greater growth, more efficiency. Smaller RFI is better efficiency. And likewise, if you turn it around on its ear, so to speak, the same is true. The more efficient animals in this data are the faster growing animals. So let's look at the Angus data. Heritabilities here, nothing very surprising. The weaning weight piece might be the most surprising. The weaning weight piece is higher than I anticipate that to be. Barry, you and I came away from Chris Finkel's class with slightly different ideas about what the heritability weaning weight was. I always thought 0.2 to 0.25 was pretty close. Genetic correlations. Again, nothing here that's terribly surprising, with the possible exception that fat and feed intake in these data appeared to be essentially zero. And I would have expected maybe a little bigger number than that. But decent, the point that I want to drive home is decent correlations between these indicator traits and feed intake. Decently high, useful indicator traits for feed intake. So let's ask the question, and we'll ask it in the Simmental data here. If I knew average daily gain and midweight, could I predict feed intake? So on the y-axis, I've got a breeding value for average daily gain and feed intake. On the x-axis, I've got a breeding value for feed intake given all 3 traits in the analysis. So this is breeding value for feed intake predicted from average daily gain and midweight. Breeding value for feed intake given that I analyzed feed intake, average daily gain and midweight. Correlation between those 2 sets of breeding values, 0.84. Again, evidence that I can derive a lot of value from the indicator traits alone in the prediction of a breeding value for feed intake. Finally, you got a question? Steer data. Oh, this slide? That's bull data. So I'm flipping back and forth between bull data and the Angus Association and steer data with the Simmental data. So the genetic evaluation for feed intake. Now I'm looking at a prototype national cattle evaluation for every animal in the pedigree. So if all I have is the pedigree, and that's most of it, the pedigree alone gives me a BIF accuracy of 0.08 for a feed intake evaluation. I don't think that's terribly surprising to most of you. If I add weaning weight, and there's almost 10,000 records that have a weaning weight in this analysis, nothing else. But I add the weaning weight, that accuracy goes up to 0.13. If I had only a yearling weight, That's a weaning weight plus a gain. Goes up to 0.17. If I had the ultrasound scan, remember the correlation's pretty small for ultrasound in these data. For fat depth, it goes up a tiny bit more. If I have a complete record, it makes a big jump. Again, no big surprise. exactly the sort of result that most of you would expect. And if I had simply the weaning weight plus the feed, I'd get almost as good an evaluation as if I have the weaning weight, the gain, and the fat depth, and the feed. So what do the accuracies of this evaluation look like? Well, obviously, from the slide that I just showed you, a lot of them are pretty low off the slide down here toward the exit. But remember now, there's 4,200 animals in this data set that have feed intake measured. But I've got 7,000 animals that have an accuracy between 0.2 and 0.3. I've got 1,200 more that have an accuracy of 0.3 to 0.4. I've got another 100 that have got an accuracy over 0.4. And I've actually got 46 that have an accuracy of 0.5 or greater given this data set. So for some animals, the accuracy of the evaluation is pretty jolly good, given that they only have, individually, they've got one measurement of feed intake themselves, plus whatever contemporaries and so on. But for over twice as many animals as I actually measured feed intake for, I've got a BIF accuracy above 0.2. Pretty good leverage, or in my estimation, pretty good leverage in that process. So what do we do with indexes? Now remember, I standardized this data, so I've got to back calculate, if you will, a ration to cost it. But at this point, I can back calculate any ration that I want to cost. And I can apply whatever costs I want. So I formulated some stereotypic ration, destandardized the intake EPD, because the intake EPD is actually given in units of standard measure. So I destandardized that. Take some long-term average costs. And one of the problems that I see with indexes, or the way people want to interpret indexes, is they want to use the cost today, and they want to change the index for the cost next week. Breeding decisions are for longer planning horizons than this week versus next. And then we just incorporate that into the appropriate indexes. At least this methodology works if I assume that the index is a summation of products of economic values and EPDs, as Dr. Henderson would have told us was fine. For efficiency, I think there's four options. I have some preferences in this process, and some of them have already shown. I think my preference is clearly on toward the residual gain side of as an expression of efficiency, as opposed to a residual feed intake evaluation. Let's look at what residual gain and residual feed really look like in data. So residual feed intake might be this yellow box, that is, all these animals gain the same, and they made, and they consumed however much dry matter. And obviously this one's better than that one on that scale. Residual gain might be looked at as this box. These animals all were provided the same amount of feed. You told the herdsman, go out there and present these animals with 19 pounds of whatever. And we had this sort of distribution of growth performance on that index, or on that feedstuff. Both of those conceptually are an efficiency measure, but they don't identify the same animals. Residual gain, and I borrowed this slide, by the way, from Mark Allen, now with Pfizer, but at the time he gave this at the Meat Animal Research Center, and this is from a Hereford Young Guns conference. I'm in the camp that says I can measure how much I'm going to feed an animal. I can't predetermine how much that animal is going to gain. And so I think that for that reason, residual gain makes more sense. I also don't take out maintenance a priori with a weight in the calculation of residual feed intake when I use residual gain. Residual gain is not adjusted for weight maintained over the period. So maintenance is, at least conceptually, maintenance gets some weighting in there. So how do we calculate this thing, John, if I've got my math right? And I think I do. Let's go back. So we've got a variance-covariance matrix that comes out of the analysis and some covariances that give us, and we do a little bit of, for this audience, trivial math. To calculate weighting factors for the EPDs. And the EPD for residual gain then is simply the EPD for gain minus the weighting factors for feed intake and for fat times their respective EPDs. Done after the fact. So this is a genetic residual feed intake or residual gain as opposed to a phenotypic one where the same kind of adjustment would have been done phenotypically beforehand. This one assures no correlated responses in feed intake if I select on residual gain and so on. Whereas before, I'm assuming the correlation structure, the covariance structure between traits is the genetic one and the phenotypic one are the same. You look at correlations amongst these measures of efficiency. Again, the take-home message here is that residual gain and residual feed intake are not the same trait. It's not an apples-for-apples choice between traits as terms of how you express the measure of efficiency. So I'm going to try to summarize this in one slide. Feed intake, gain, so on, are the root traits. That's where we need to put our emphasis in data collection. That's where we need to put our emphasis in national cattle evaluation. NCE needs to analyze those root data. We need to spend effort, my opinion, we need to spend effort on data quality. We need to spend effort on model development. Those kinds of things. Anybody that's come to these meetings for very long and heard me talk more than twice isn't surprised that this point's here. Single trait selection is not advisable. And particularly so for this kind of trait. Let's learn a little bit from our competition, the swine industry and the poultry industry. They both tried that selection for efficiency thing in a situation where they can measure intake a lot more efficiently than we can. They both had that wreck. Let's not do it again. Post-NCE analysis, after the National Cattle Evaluation, additional analysis will be necessary to inform our selection decisions. Life is not as simple as taking a breeding value or an EPD and saying, that's the magic number. And finally, be careful what you wish for. I'll entertain any questions.
We're a little bit late, but I want to make sure we give Mike the opportunity to answer any of your questions really quickly. So I'll go ahead and start with Dave here, and we'll take two or three questions and break for
You indicated the correlation between weaning weights and residual gain or feed intake. The question is, are the weaning weights adjusted for age of dam differences?
Yes, they are.
Okay, they are. So, in other words, it's the breed association's 205-day adjusted weight.
Yes, yes, yeah. It's a 205-day adjusted weaning weight.
Okay, and the rate of gain over what period is that taken?
That's the post-weaning gain. So it's from 205. The weight, the rate of gain is used is the 205-day weight and the 365-day weight. Give you a 160-day gain.
So it's simply the difference between adjusted 205 and adjusted 365.
That's correct.
Thank you.
So Mike, the correlations you find between feed intake and these other traits depend a lot, I think, on when animals start have their feed intake measured. If you're not adjusting for start weight or mid weight, it depends whether you're starting 60 days after weaning or 300 days of age or at some specific weight. So
yes.
So how are these different correlations, what do they derive from?
So the correlations are made, Gary, assuming that feed intake is the same trait as long as it's measured in that window between weaning and yearling over a 70-day test period. So conceptually we could have animals that started at 290 days compared to animals that started at 240 days. I have not parceled out whether starting at 290 versus 240 makes that much difference. But if they come to the test station or come to a test facility and have a roughly a month acclimatization time period, they get to be 240. They can't get the test over with by a year or thereabouts and be much older than 300 days. So there's a fairly limited range and I've not done the work nor do I have enough data, frankly, to parcel out that effect. It may be real.
Question? Correlation between efficiency of gain on high concentrate diets relative to efficiency of gain on high roughage diets.
You had to ask. I don't know the answer. But that one's just one piece of it. Correlation of efficiency of energy usage, if you will, for cows grazing whatever and feedlot cattle eating whatever, but it's different, is an open question at this point. Because there's a lot of things about those animals that are different. Things like the population of microbes that exist in the rumen of the critter is different. So we may be talking about correlated but different biological processes that affect that. And I actually think that's an area where we don't know the answer to your question.
Residual gain, and you talked about sort of doing that without intake, with just fat and I don't know, a couple measurements. A
couple of traits.
And also with intake in it, and your accuracy has indicated that the two traits without intake would work about as well. But your response to your index is depending on the regression and the standard deviation, not just the correlation. And so when you do that adjustment to a constant intake, isn't that still a pretty small response that you're going to get because they're antagonistic?
I mean, you're in the root question is, would I rather have the intake phenotypes? And the answer to that is clearly yes. But there's two pieces to that, and part of that is, for at least animals that are well connected in the data, some of them I don't have to have the phenotype for. There's some optimal strategy, I think, that allows you to decide which animals to test that considers not only their correlated trait information, but also how they're connected pedigree-wise and so on. I'd rather have the phenotypes because the response to selection would be greater if it were informed with the phenotypes.